Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. We are back in Turkmenistan, and this country has been one of our favorite topics this year, not often for good reasons. Today we plan to discuss impact of Turkmenistan's planned mega sports event, the Indoor Martial Arts Asian Games. That's about to start with participation of all the athletes from the Asian countries. Turkmenistan approaches this project as a huge PR opportunity, but already faced with challenging economic situations, this adventure is taking up the level of challenges even higher. The effect has been seen in every aspect of life, be it bread and butter issues for ordinary people, their mobility, their ability to practice their basic rights, freedoms, etc. As we are getting closer to the actual games, challenges are mounting. This is our topic for today's Majlis. To discuss the issue, I have a panel of a very distinguished guests from New York. I am joined by Rachel Denber, Deputy Director for Europe and Central Asia at the Human Rights Watch. Joining us from Prague is Farouk Yusufi, who is the Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Turkmenistan service, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlok Awazi. Welcome on board, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. So, Farouk, let's start with you. Tell us, please, where we are at this stage in terms of preparation. Is Ashgabat ready to go for the next week?
I think from the point of view of the authorities, yes, Ashgabat is ready. It's being prepared, and they had various wasteful events for that. So they staged an event to lit the fire for the Asian Games in some kind of a remote area. So they are still wasting money for this event. I have to correct you, Muhammad. Mm-hmm. It's not a mega event. Yes, mm-hmm. For the authorities, it's a mega PR opportunity, as you pointed out. Right. But it's just indoor games. It's the level is like something a competition between universities or between high schools, and the country already spent more than some countries spend for Olympic Games. To what we know, they have already spent close to $15 billion. Oh. The country that's suffering the worst economic crisis since its independence, and they've been restricting everything possible. The last restriction today was that the ordinary mere Turkmens will not be allowed to certain shopping centers, certain restaurants that are believed to be designed for serving the guests of these notorious Asian Games that have become a curse, another curse for this poor nation. And we also hear that the authorities are going to not only restrict its own citizens, but the guests will be isolated from casual or coincidence encounter with locals.
Let's talk about that a little bit later, Farouk. Before we get into that aspect, Bruce, maybe you would like to jump in here. So Farouk is talking about like a $15 billion of investment for this project. So we already said that Turkmenistan is facing this huge economic challenge. So where Turkmenistan is getting this money from?
Well, that is a good question. You know, obviously, when they were awarded these games several years ago, it looked like they were probably going to get the money because, you know, the price of gas was going up, and they certainly have lots of natural gas, and that's their big export. Since then, you know, it really has been unclear the last year and a half, 2 years, exactly where they're getting this money from. The price of gas, of course, we know went down. Turkmenistan lost two of its three customers during that time, so they're only selling to China, and of course, they owe China money, so we're not even sure how much money China is paying them, because some of that gas is going to pay back Chinese loans, which are running into the billions and billions of dollars. Increasingly, the burden for paying for these games has fallen upon the people of Turkmenistan. We get reports that state employees, and not only state employees, are having their wages garnished, and this is being presented as a voluntary donation to help out the games, which of course hardly any of the regular citizens of the country will even be able to see. Just any place they practically could get money from They've tried to do that. Local businesses are being encouraged, quote unquote, to make donations for these games. You know, anyone that they suspect has any money at all is they're really pressing them to put up money for these games. We suspect that they are borrowing money from other countries to pay for this too. But of course, you know, the nature of Turkmenistan's system, it's so opaque that we're not sure. But by themselves, you know, that figure that Farouk quoted of $15 billion, there's no way in the world they could come up with that kind of money. We know for a fact from the Chinese that the Chinese bought what I think about $4.5 or $5 billion worth of gas last year, and again, that's how much gas was worth that they got, but they didn't pay all that money. But that was bilateral trade with China, and China is their main trading partner right now. So anywhere they can get this money from, they're doing it. And like I said, unfortunately, very unfortunately for the people of that country, who are not going to get anything out of this practically at all. They're the ones that are being asked to foot the bill to the extent possible, so that they can pay for these games and show off to the world, you know, the beautiful city, the white marble city.
Rachel, financial burdens are aside, and Farouk and Bruce also touched upon this a little bit about the impact of this all process onto ordinary people. So as a human rights activist, as Turkmenistan is heading to this game in days leading up to this, what have been your concerns?
I just want to echo that our concerns are some of the same that Bruce and Farouk discussed. It's the first that it's the ordinary people in Turkmenistan who are going to have to foot the bill for these games in more ways than one. Turkmenistan wants to get prestige for these games, but it's the people who are living there who risk just losing everything. And this ranges from, so the specific issues that we're looking at are things, first and foremost, we just published a report on unfair compensation that for homeowners whose homes were expropriated and demolished in order to create this white marble city, right? So the Turkmen government has for 15 years, you know, been involved in these massive urban beautification and reconstruction projects. So it's nothing new that they're demolished, during which they demolish homes, expropriate people, and give them unfair compensation. So this is nothing new in Turkmenistan, but it has certainly escalated as the government was really racing, starting, you know, at the end of 2010, beginning of 2011, to create this, this exquisite, absolutely perfect white marble city. So what do I mean when I say that people aren't paid fair compensation? I mean that there's absolutely no independent assessment for what your home is worth before it gets demolished, just square meter per square meter. The local authorities get to decide, you know, what they actually consider living space. So if you have outbuildings, which many people have in Turkmenistan, you know, they have a home and they have many outbuildings, and it's an extended family that lives in a property and grows as the, and you know, the property, you know, the buildings grow as the family grows. So, you know, you have authorities just, you know, taking, a, you know, an extended family of, you know, 10, maybe 15 people who've been living in a home that they sort of built out, and then giving them a, you know, some crappy 2 or 3 room apartment in a disgusting building that has leaks and molds and elevators don't work and things like that. So they're really cheating people. And it's interesting, you know, you said, where are they finding the money to pay for these games? Well, at the same time that they're lavishing money on these games, they're cheating residents, the homeowners, right and left. We're also concerned about many, many other indignities that the people in Turkmenistan are being subjected to. So, for example, there was a couple of weeks ago, the government said, well, you know, we might have to impose travel restrictions, you know, starting 1 month out from the beginning of the game, right? So, and then, you know, the many, many roads are closed. Well, okay, yes, games need some security, but, you know, you don't close down, you know, half the city's roads. And I want to emphasize that this is completely abnormal, right? So we have, Human Rights Watch has done research on truly mega sporting events in a number of different geographies. I've never seen anything as perverse as this, right? So, and just to underscore what Farouk said, this is not a mega event, right? It's an international sports event. It's indoor and martial arts games. It is not, it's the Turkmen government that's turning this into something, into a mega ego, a mega vanity project. at the price that, you know, at a price that that just regular Turkmen citizens are going to pay.
The problems that you mentioned, Rachel, to continue with you, it's obviously appalling. Also, copying from your words, assuming that Turkmenistan is also doing this for show, and the ones who are participating in the show are, in fact, playing in the hands of Turkmen authorities. I'm talking about these foreign athletes who will be joining the game in Ashgabat next week. So some NGOs, I believe, Human Rights Watch was part of it, was trying to convince foreign governments to ignore this game. What happened to those efforts? Any success?
So, look, I don't think that it's athletes who should have to pay the price for the Turkmen government's wrongdoings and Turkmen government's violations. Athletes shouldn't be punished. So let this is the fifth indoor nation martial arts games. They've, you know, athletes have gone to other countries for this event. They should be able to go wherever they need to go to participate in these games. What's appalling is the conduct of organizers and owners of these games, the Olympic Council of Asia, the OCA, to whom Human Rights Watch and the Turkmenistan Human Rights Turkmenistan Initiative on Human Rights, we've been working together with them, including on the House Demolitions Project. They have not responded to a single one of our five letters on a variety of different issues, ranging from the harassment and threats against Radio Free Europe journalist, Radio Liberty journalist, Sultana
Achilova.
Achilova, thank you. Ranging from that and to house demolitions issues, to the freedom of movement issue. And this is a disgrace because the Olympic Council of Asia is a member of the Olympic movement. Its charter is the Olympic, it's guided by the Olympic Charter. It's obligated to uphold the values that are enshrined in the Olympic Charter, which include human dignity, respect for human dignity, and respect for press freedoms. And we can just imagine, you know, there is no press freedom in Turkmenistan. I can only imagine what's going to happen to any journalist who comes to Turkmenistan for these games and tries to look right or left, or, you know, step beyond, the bubble of the athletic event. You know, I'm sure that they will have minders. It'll be up to the Turkmen government to prove that they're not going to surveil journalists, that they're not going to try to stop regular Turkmen people from talking to foreigners. I'll believe it when I see it, though. They certainly have a terrible record in that regard.
Okay, Farouk, let's continue with you. Earlier, you were pointing at some of the challenges that, because of this game, people are facing these days, starting with your own journalists on the ground. Already I know that they are working in a challenging situation, but this game had any effect on their day-to-day working?
Yes, of course they did. And first and foremost, as you know, Sultan Achilova was again attacked as she was taking pictures, gathering material about the effects that the preparations for these games had on the lives of ordinary people. And since then, she's been under constant surveillance, and her life became unbearable. It's not only the journalists, it's everyone. Today we had a report about students being bused to the events, what they call chara in Turkmen, the events that to accompany the opening ceremony or any ceremony connected to the Asian Games, and they very often they are made to wait for hours on the heat in Ashgabat, and then they are not properly taken back. So, and the state organization, they want their employees to be on alert, and then they pick possible supporters of the Team Turkmenistan for the Asian Games, and then they make those supporters to buy the outfit on their own expense. So it's everything and everyone became subordinate to these Asian Games, to this PR stunt by the government of Turkmenistan.
Bruce, so this is what the people are facing in the country. So the ones who will be coming to the country, like athletes, or the ones who will be accompanying those athletes, foreign athletes. So what should they expect as they are on their way to Turkmenistan?
Well, this is another interesting question, too. Ideally, you would think if you were going to spend the money to go to a country, spend money on tickets for a sporting event, spend money on a hotel, things like that, that you would have some freedom to walk around, see some of the interesting sights of the city or the country. But apparently it's not going to be very much like that at all. You have to employ a guide from a tourist agency while you're there, someone to show you around. Now, of course, the Turkmen government is couching this in terms of, like, they will help facilitate, your moving around the city and take you to the places where the good restaurants, whatever, things like that. But in fact, these people are watching everyone that comes in. They've been tasked by the Ministry of National Security with keeping track of all the foreigners that come into the country. So this is an extra expense that you have to deal with right away, is that you have to pay for a guide to come into the country. Now, once you're in, we know that they've already cordoned off a zone. There's a special area around the facilities, the sports facilities, and where the hotels are, where foreign guests are supposed to stay, and they can't go out of this zone, meaning they can't even go to the outskirts of Ashgabat. They're not supposed to leave this area that where all the events are and where the hotels are. And I can imagine that they're going to have security watching to make sure that nobody does go outside there. So if you're going for a pleasant stay, you have to stay in a limited area. You have to have this local guide with you all the time. And of course, as we've heard, you won't have really any opportunity to interact with the locals, which is always one of the pleasures of going to these places, is meeting the people that live there, and then they explain to you how they live and tell you something about their culture. But except for some handpicked people that the Turkmen government have already designated, the guests arriving won't have any chance to see these kind of people at all. So they're really, paying to live in a bubble for a while and see this totally artificial place that the government has spent, billions of dollars creating, specifically to try to convince people that all of Turkmenistan are, this is the soul of Turkmenistan, this beautiful part that you're in, when in fact, it's really a facade.
Farouk, before we get into the second part of the show, Turkmenistan, we know it's already a very restricted country, but this unprecedented restriction, how the authorities are explaining that?
They do not explain. They just say we are doing. And very often they don't even announce. They will give maybe some small notes somewhere on an official website that this, but this street will be closed. But the population find out, the residents find out that this place was closed when they arrived there, because of what Turkmenistan went through these 25 or 26 years of independence. I mean, they've been really testing the patience of the people. People were patient, and that's why I assume that the Turkmen authorities assume that people take it as granted, take it for granted that they will just close, they will not announce, they will not explain anything, and people will have to cope with it.
Thank you very much, Farouk. So, as all, we agree that this project is coming with huge cost for both the country and also to its population. So what happens after the project? Where is this leaving the country, and what are the plans about the future of this infrastructure? We will continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like the Meclis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we are discussing Turkmenistan's Asian Games and its impact on ordinary people. To discuss the subject, I'm joined by Rachel Denver, Deputy Director for Europe and Central Asia at the Human Rights Watch, Farouk Yusupi, Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Turkmen Service, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Owazi. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So now let's talk about September 28th, when things will be over. The country is overwhelmingly under debt. Athletes are gone. Where is this adventure leaving Turkmenistan in? Who wants to take the question? Rachel, maybe you?
Sure. Well, leaves the country. I'm not the. It leaves the country in a huge pile of debt, as you said. Mm-hmm. I think that leaves the country scrambling. Yeah. It leaves a lot of very people who have been put upon and are resentful. Mm-hmm. Perhaps. I mean, I hope that they feel a tremendous sense of relief that all of this is over. God forbid if any of them actually tried to have contact with foreigners and who are coming to the country, they will certainly, I fear that they will face repercussions. I want to know what's going to happen to all those hotels that they built and these facilities. What are they going to do with them?
Yeah.
But I wouldn't, I think our experience with other sporting events that are held for prestige reasons in countries that are autocracies or worse, there's an expectation that, once the event is over, there'll be the government will, the authorities will relax a little bit and there'll be a thaw. That in no country that I have in recent years have I seen that to be the case. So I would not rule out more crackdowns on people who are angry or people who the government fears will be angry. The government's got a lot to be insecure about these days, so I think they're just going to, I fear that they're just going to get, completely, act on their worst paranoias and just create more of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Farouk, maybe you have an answer to Rachel's question. So what will happen with those infrastructure, those hotels and those, I don't know, whatever they are building, building so far?
Turkmenistan has had this kind of experience of empty hotels and empty facilities, in Avaza. Avaza is a Turkmen government's project to show the world that they can also build a Dubai-like town in nowhere. And we see that that's a resort area is mostly empty and most of the time. And to the answer of Rachel's, what will happen after these games, I can only add that after these games, things are going to be worse before they get better, because these games were keeping people somehow busy, somehow occupied. They were bust into different events, or they were selected as supporters. They were busy. But after this celebration is over, they will not be busy. They will not be, it will be very challenging for the government. First of all, they accumulated a lot of debt for organizing these games, and they are going to spend many millions more during the games. They will find it very challenging to pay those debts, and they will find very challenging to convince their own people that to explain why they came to the state of the affairs that when they don't have any money to pay the public responsibilities, to cover their public responsibilities. They have a shabby economy on the verge of collapse. It will be very difficult for them, not only for the government, but only for but also for the population of Turkmenistan.
Bruce, this Farouk's points brought me to another very important question, that he said that the game or the preparation keeping some people busy, and the other huge group was busy with this project was the ones who are working in these projects as laborers. And once the project is over, their job will be over. What kind of effect that is going to have on day-to-day lives of thousands of people, I believe?
Well, for me, this has been one of the big questions for months now. We know that unemployment in Turkmenistan is huge by anyone's standards. They don't put out these kind of figures, but I know Farouk has had reports earlier that at minimum it's 60% unemployment in the country, right? They've been laying off people in the gas sector, which is, that's like the backbone of their economy. And that's how bad things have gotten, that they might have laid off half the workers in the gas and oil sector in the country. The one sector that was employing people for the last couple of years was construction in Ashgabat for these games that they're doing now. And so everyone that's been, at least there was a release valve, so to speak. There was a place where they could absorb some of the unemployed laborers and bring them under very strange conditions to Ashgabat to build, you know, to help build these facilities. Now all those jobs are going. So if the unemployment really is 60%, you're about to increase that, you know, 10-15% more after these games are over, because those jobs are gone. You know, and again, these were a lot of times, these were people that came from the different regions where, of course, the economy is much worse than it is in the capital. You know, and I'd mentioned they'd worked under strange conditions. And I think it's worth pointing out that they don't let people from outside Ashgabat into Ashgabat. Mm-hmm. They do let the laborers in, but they can't stay in Ashgabat. They live on the outskirts of town and they ride buses in to get to work because they can't drive their cars in. They don't let cars from the regions in and haven't for months. Now, so these people are all going to drive back with whatever money they've made during the last few months, maybe a couple years, working on these facilities with no job waiting for them in the future at all. You know, and this is another one of the parts about the waste of money on these facilities and the games in general. That money could have been spent on creating jobs within the country, but it's gone. And in fact, you know, as we hear, they're in debt. So, you know, this is like just the worst of all worlds. And, you know, and just to put that in perspective, what are we spending money on here? A monorail that yeah. runs, you know, what, like 1 or 2 kilometers, that is worthless the minute the games are over. What are they going to do with that? Nothing. They've installed marble curbs along the sides of the roads in places. That's idiocy. You know, cars drive there. They park against it. Why would you have white marble curbs? You know, and all that's done for 10 days, just for a 10-day event. I would think that after the games are over, you know, their security forces are really going to be tested, because the patience of the people has got to be really low, and life is going to get worse for them in the future. It will not get better because there's just no money to do anything for them anymore. It's all been spent.
Unfortunately, we have to conclude the discussion, but before to do that, final question, maybe Rachel, we can start with you. If there is anything good coming out of this game, what is that?
Well, I would hope that the only good thing that would come out of this game would be a heightened awareness on the part of the International Olympic Committee that it has to rein in what's happening, or get a closer grip on what's happening in the name of the Olympic Charter in other parts of the world. Turkmenistan should never have been given these games. This should never have happened. There needs that, you know, the International Olympic Committee has done a lot to introduce human rights reforms into its host city contracts that it signs with host cities. Now, this is not an Olympic game, mm-hmm. But still, the OCA is part of the IOC. Mm. So maybe and so there needs to be closer scrutiny by the International Olympic Committee about what's happening in other Olympic committees and what they're up to. I just want to leave one thought though, and that's the thought of Farid Tuhfatullin, who said recently, I mean, I could not have said it better, that the games last all of 10 days, but people are going to suffer for years to come.
Okay, the same question, Bruce and Farouk, to you before we end the discussion. So if anything good coming out of this game, what that would be?
Yeah, I think anything good could be done by the participants of these games, especially the Western or foreign journalists. Mm. I hope that some of them will be able to break out of this Olympic village where they will be watched, and I hope that someone will be able to escape and get information about, you know, lives of the ordinary people, and let the international community know what's going on in this unfortunate country. But for the athletes, these games mean nothing, because these games will not affect their ratings. These games are just a friendly gathering of athletes where they will just compete, and the awards that they will gain, they will win, will mean nothing as far as their position in the indexes and in the ratings concerned. Mm.
Okay, Bruce, let me put you even in tougher position. From Turkmenistan's point of view, what can be the ideal outcome of this adventure?
Well, that they would get glowing reviews from the journalists that were there and the athletes that participated, and they would all come away and say, you know, Turkmenistan is an absolutely fantastic place, and Ashgabat is a beautiful city, and we've had just nothing but a great time out there, and recommend it to, you know, to their friends and family and everything as an ideal place to take a holiday or at least drop by and see what's going on out there. I don't think that's going to happen. You know, I think that most journalists that are going to go there have enough experience that they will see through this. It's clearly an artificial city downtown. And I think that in the end, although I hope the athletes have a good time, I hope the competitions are really good. I hope, that the people that are there to compete come away with something out of this. But I suspect that the reviews of what it was like to be in Ashgabat during the games will probably be generally bad from most of the visitors that go there, and certainly from the media. You have to fly in to Ashgabat, and you're going to see that what the middle of the city looks like is not what the rest of the country looks like. I have a feeling I won't say that I hope, but I have a feeling that when this comes away, that this will actually blacken Turkmenistan's reputation far more than it helps it.
Okay, with these in notes, Rachel, do you want to say something?
The authorities are trying to boost Turkmenistan's international prestige with these games, but I don't think anyone's going to be impressed by how monstrously they're treating their people.
Okay, with these notes, thank you very much, Rachel Denberg, Deputy Director for Europe and Central Asia at the Human Rights Watch, Farouk Yusupi, Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Turkmen Service, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlag Owazi, for your time, for your thoughts.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
This is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.